At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Well, hello, hello, hello again, Beat Check listeners. I'm your host this week, Shane Dixon Kavanaugh. Oregon has long been awash in cash when it comes to state elections and political races. One big reason? It's among just a small handful of states that do not limit how much money candidates can accept from individuals, political groups, corporations, unions, or any other entity. But that could change this year, as Oregon voters will likely face a pair of similar-looking yet markedly different ballot measures, each of which would limit how much individuals and groups can donate to candidates. Joining me today is Carlos Fuentes, state government reporter with the Oregonian Oregon Live, who has spent some time digging into these dueling proposals. Carlos, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Shane. Thanks for having me.
So let's just set the context here a little bit for proposed campaign finance reform in the state of Oregon. Money and politics. I mean, it's an issue that is on a lot of people's minds often. And as recently as 2020, more than three quarters of Oregon voters supported a statewide measure to allow campaign finance limits. So there's a real appetite for something like this, but it's yet to happen in this state. And I think you mentioned in your story that came out earlier this week, and it will be in the show notes too for our listeners to read through as well, that Oregon is only one of five states that doesn't really have any campaign finance limits to speak of. And so there's been no action on campaign finance reform in the state. And why has that never happened here?
Yeah, well, the short answer that I heard from people who are pushing for these ballot measures is that legislators haven't wanted to do it. Unions and corporations have, of course, been pouring millions of dollars into campaigns in Oregon for years now, and it's been increasing rapidly with no limits at all. The last governor's race in 2022 saw more than $70 million in contributions to the top three candidates. Dan Meek, one of the lawyers working behind one of the proposed measures, and he's been leading these kinds of efforts in the state for years now, told me that lawmakers just like the system the way it is now. They benefit from getting those millions of dollars because it goes toward their advertisements and other efforts as well. I think it is important to clarify that some legislators have introduced bills in the past to limit contributions. For example, there were two last year, but they never received a major push. As Meek put it, if they really wanted to do it, they would have. And it's the same thing with this upcoming session.
Well, it's really interesting that you mentioned sort of the interest among lawmakers in the state with and their appetite for these types of measures. For instance, as you point out in your story, when she was a candidate just in 2022, now Governor Tina Kotek promised to make campaign finance limits a priority within her administration. And like you said, no such change managed to materialize during the first legislative session in which she was presiding as governor. Where's the governor on this issue now? And there's an opportunity to potentially take up this issue in a short session that's beginning in a matter of days.
Mm-hmm. So going back just to last year, to those bills that I mentioned, as you said, when Kotek entered office, she said she was going to take action, and she did take some last year. Those two bills that I mentioned, she introduced one of them. I will say it's important to point out that campaign finance advocates like Dan Meek pointed out that there were major loopholes in it, but it was still introduced. The thing was, it didn't get passed. There wasn't a major push at the end of the session to get either of those bills through. When I asked the governor's office why this was, they said the six-week walkout by Senate Republicans during the session last year was responsible for that not passing. Recently, I spoke to the governor, and I asked if campaign finance is going to come up during this short session, and she said no. I followed up, and a spokesperson said that the governor is too busy and focused on a big housing production bill that is apparently taking up all of her time. But she did say that she still wants to see that campaign finance reform happen in the state. And she said that they'll be waiting to see what happens with the ballot measures.
Right. So that brings us to these two different ballot initiatives that are focused on this particular issue that petitions are currently circulating. Two campaigns are working to get the signatures needed to get this to get their proposals on the ballot. Carlos, talk about both of them a bit and who's behind them and how are they different exactly? Because ultimately, both are looking to actually set some limits to, political contributions in the state for the first time.
Yeah. So as you say, I think it's important to note just first of all that they both seem to have the same goal. They both seem to want to enact these limits on how much people and organizations can contribute to candidates. The difference is how strict they're being and, you know, the way that they're going about it. So on one hand, we have Initiative Petition 9, which is backed by a good government group called Honest Elections, and they have been focused on this for years now. They have worked with national groups similar to theirs to write their petition, and theirs would, of course, limit contributions on political candidates. To give you just a hard example, it would limit contributions from individuals to statewide campaigns to $2,000 and contributions from political parties to $50,000. But of course, there's a bunch of different limits depending on who is contributing, if it's an organization, if it's an individual, and also what type of office they are giving it to. I spoke with Jason Kafori, one of the lawyers with Honest Elections, and he told me that if enacted, Initiative Petition 9 would give Oregon some of the most stringent campaign finance regulations in the whole country. On the other hand, then there's Initiative Petition 42, which is backed by a coalition of labor unions. And these include Oregon AFSCME and PICUN, Oregon's foremost farm workers union. Interestingly enough, 90% of the language and restrictions are the same as Honest Elections. So there's a whole lot of similarities, except there are some differences, as the Honest Elections folks call them loopholes that could allow groups like unions to continue giving millions of dollars to candidates. Not going to get into all of the technicalities, but I'll just give you details about two of the biggest caveats.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. The first one is related to small donor committees, which are organizations composed of members who pay fees, such as labor unions. And these fees can't be more than $250. So the Honest Elections proposed measure would limit the contributions from small donor committees to $20,000 for a statewide candidate or $5,000 for a local candidate. So a labor union under this small donor committee section could only give $20,000 to a statewide candidate like the governor. On the other hand, the Labor Coalition's proposal would allow a small donor committee to contribute much more. It would be up to $50 from every single one of its donors to any candidate.
By donors, you mean members, right? Like a member, if you're a member of SEIU, you could give $50 to your union that could then go to a particular candidate or cause.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, and this is obviously a much, much higher sum. For example, a union with 10,000 members, this would allow them to contribute to donate $500,000 to a candidate in both the primary and general elections. So this would actually be twice over 1 year. And then the other loophole, the other major loophole, is regarding membership organizations, which are any social welfare organizations or labor groups. Examples of the social welfare organizations could be the League of Conservation Voters or Oregon Right to Life. So the Honest Elections proposal would allow these organizations to contribute $10,000 to any candidate plus $10,000 of in-kind services. So that can include door knocking, phone banking, even providing childcare. It actually explicitly prohibits them from providing consulting. These in-kind services can include consulting. Mm-hmm. The union-backed measure has much, much higher limits. Under their proposed measure, membership organizations could contribute up to $30,000 to candidates plus 36 months of paid work per election cycle. So to put that in dollars, to make it a little maybe easier to understand, a membership organization like a union could in theory hire 6 full-time campaign consultants for a year, which would be worth up to $1 million, and they would be working full-time for the campaign. I spoke with Michelle Ruffin, who is the executive director of Our Oregon, which is a union-funded political group that supports the coalition's proposed measure. I said, hey, here are these alleged loopholes. You know, what is the purpose behind allowing unions to donate this much money? And she said that allowing voters to donate through membership organizations gives them freedom to exercise their vote in the political process. She's saying that the union's measure gives your average middle-class voter a little more power and it levels the playing field.
Perhaps I'm just kind of thinking out loud here. Those same union members, though, too, could conceivably donate as individuals to a political campaign as well, whether it was $50 going through their union or as individuals themselves, correct?
Correct. As Dan Meek with Honest Elections told me, small donor committees actually only exist in Oregon and Colorado. 48 other states don't have them at all. And yet, as he pointed out, unions in those states have still found perfectly valid and legitimate ways to have this political power, to have some sort of influence and level the playing field in their own way.
And certainly, you described them, or the provisions within the union coalition's proposal, conceivably would allow a labor organization with a lot of members to donate considerably much more money. Is there a way within that proposal as well for, I mean, businesses and industries and business groups have also been one of the largest, you know, political players in terms of money and campaigns in Oregon, much like labor unions. So is there a way in which business organizations could do something similar to direct large amounts of money to candidates or causes?
I believe that there would be a way, and the way to do that would be through those membership organizations. Like we said, those small donor committees, they cap how much money their members give them, but the membership organizations don't have a cap. You know, these are it's a very broad group. It can be a social welfare organization or a labor group. And there's a lot of organizations that anybody could create very quickly that they could classify as a social welfare organization. And then they could funnel money through that.
And correct me if I'm wrong here, if I read this incorrectly in your story, with these proposed campaign finance limitations, these would apply to candidates running for political office, but not ballot measures, right?
Correct. The U.S. Supreme Court has regularly ruled against enacting limits for ballot measure campaigns.
Got it. And then I was also, when reading your story, I was also struck by the fact that perhaps somewhat ironically, a lot of money is pouring into both of these efforts to ultimately come up with ways to limit the amount of money that goes into future political campaigns and elections. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about who some of the top contributors are for both of these proposed ballot measures. And how much money has each of these campaigns raised to date?
So in terms of fundraising, the Labor Coalition has outraised Honest Elections by a little more than double, which is, of course, vital in terms of getting signatures and just spreading the word about your measures if you want Oregonians to vote for it and see it on the ballot this fall and recognize it, right? We looked at campaign filings, and we found that the Labor Coalition raised $470,000 last year, most of which came from the state's biggest public employee unions. For example, the group received $200,000 from the Oregon Education Association, the state teacher union, and $100,000 from Oregon AFSCME. So to no surprise, the labor unions that have the most power in the state are backing the Labor Coalition's proposal. And then Honest Elections has received roughly $188,000. And these have not been in cash, but in in-kind contributions from the Oregon Giving Back Fund, which is a nonprofit that has more than $1 million in assets. The lone donor of the Oregon Giving Back Fund was Harry Lonsdale, a millionaire entrepreneur who lived in Bend and died in 2014. And he was a big supporter of environmental and good government issues. Although I think it is still important to point out that this organization could receive anonymous contributions and they would not have to be publicly disclosed.
And so moving ahead here, obviously each ballot measure initiative needs to get quite a lot of signatures. I think what's the number again? It's over 120,000, right?
It's a little over 120,000.
Right. So as this begins to play out a little more in 2024, what are you going to be paying attention to and looking at in terms of both of these ballot measures and whether they make them, you know, onto the ballot this year?
Yeah, I think the number one thing to watch out for is more unions joining this cause. If they can get even more public employee unions and more of these, you know, middle class, your average voter to support and get behind this, then it seems that they have a really good chance of potentially, well, first of all, making it onto the ballot, and second, getting that approval they need, because both of these measures could end up on the ballot this fall. And the one that would pass is the one that gets the most votes. So at the end of the day, we'll see what happens in November. Neither of the groups have received the number of petition signatures necessary. I believe the Labor Coalition actually just begun collecting signatures recently. So we'll see how many signatures they can get in the several months that we have until November.
Well, I can tell you, just the other day, I was catching the number 15 bus to our office downtown, and there was a petitioner on the TriMet bus for the Honest Elections campaign, soliciting signatures on the bus ride during rush hour. So, signature gatherers are out and about, at least in Portland right now. And I'm sure some of our listeners have potentially signed one of these petitions already, or if not, they may be encountering some of their signature gatherers soon.
Yeah. And we'll also be, of course, on the lookout for any advertisements, and we'll see who is giving the most money to these campaigns.
Well, Carlos, thank you so much for your time today. It was great chatting with you about this story. And listeners, once again, we're including a link to Carlos's recent story in our show notes, and we really hope you check it out. It's a really important topic and a very fascinating political one as well. So thanks, Carlos.
Thanks so much for having me, Shane.
Thanks so much for listening to Beat Check with the Oregonian. If you like this show, give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people find the show, and tell a friend. Help spread the word. The best way to support our journalism and stories like this one is with a subscription to the Oregonian Oregon Live. You can do that at oregonlive.com/podsupport. Until next time.